There are many amazing creatures that inhabit our planet. Some that swim, some that fly, some that walk on four legs, and some that walk on hundreds. Unfortunately, some of these species aren't able to survive in the harsh conditions that have been brought upon them due to circumstances that are out of their control. These six beautiful species all have one thing in common. They are facing the brink of extinction due to the same aggravating factor. Humans.
One of the ways that I've learned to cope with the climate crisis is to create, to make art and find ways to collaborate with the more than human. One of my favorite mediums is working with cyanotypes, which is like a cameraless process of printing that relies on sun exposure and water to develop beautiful blue and white images. Last winter, when the snow finally fell in the Missoula Valley, I found myself in the surrounding woods on a sunny day, laying lichen over squares of fabric and melting snow with my hands to process the deep blue images. Making art in this way helps me be with the world just as it is and reminds me that I don't need to be in control to make beauty. Sometimes all it takes is experiment and surrender and being in conversation with the elements at hand. I'm Sarah Aronson, a climate-aware psychotherapist, which means I'm trained to understand the complex psychological distress related to the climate crisis, as well as how best to support coping, adaptation, and transformation in the face of paralyzing anxiety, despair, and change. Throughout this season of grounding, I've talked with academics and experts in fields ranging from environmental philosophy to the pharmaceutical industry. I've tried to nail down what it means when our bodies seem to know that something is off with the seasons. What do we do with all our feelings, including numbness and apathy, within an ever-changing environment while trying to manage the day-to-day? I've also tried to find language for our experiences to help us name what we've been feeling. Ultimately, it turns out that a lot of us have been feeling this way, and we just haven't been able to name it. In this episode of Grounding, we're checking in with two different artists about how they're facing climate change through their respective mediums, visual art and dance. I wanted to hear from them about how they process the cognitive dissonance of living through these times. Jonathan Marquis is the artist behind the Glacier Drawing Project, the only hand-drawn visual record of the 59 named glaciers in Montana's Crown of the Continent and Greater Yellowstone ecosystems. Jonathan set out to bear witness to the changing climate in his own backyard, but isn't so sure his project adds any value to the planet in crisis. We'll hear first from Hannah Dusick, a choreographer based in Missoula, Montana. She started a company called Kinetic Convergence Dance, and through that company, put on an evening-length production called Where Did They All Go?, audio from which you heard at the top of the episode. This performance was focused on the disappearance of six different species and challenged its audiences with the guilt of being complicit in those disappearances.
Hi, I am Hannah Dusek, and I am a dancer here in Missoula through multiple different forms. I graduated from the University of Montana with my Bachelor of Arts in Dance in 2023, and now I'm a company member on Bearbait Dance, and I have my own collective, Kinetic Convergence Dance, as well. It was probably in high school, which is around like 2016, you know, when you start to like have your own thoughts about the world outside of like family and what they say to you and everything like that. So I feel like high school was the first time, but then my freshman year in college was when I really learned about it because I took Intro to Climate Studies, and that class was a huge like, whoa, this stuff is going down right now in the world and it's not okay. And then through that class and studying wildlife biology at the university, I was like, okay, it's not just us that's going to be affected. It's like all of nature and everything.
That Intro to Climate Change Studies Hannah mentioned is the same one taught by Peter McDonough, one of our first guests from episode one. She said Peter was the first person who encouraged her to combine her love for dance and wildlife into one idea. The climate crisis scares Hannah, and she feels it both in her mind and her body.
I feel like it's something that I honestly wake up every morning and I'm like I'm staring outside my window like, do we see the apocalyptic sky yet?
But dance helps her relieve some of that anxiety, and it's through dance that she feels she can use her education and her self-expression. Her company, Kinetic Convergence Dance, and its production called Where Did They All Go? Provided the perfect blend of Hannah's creativity and activism. The performance involved six dancers who portrayed six different animals whose livelihoods were in jeopardy because of human-caused climate change.
The initial plan of the show was kind of just when there was a lot of talk about climate change, and I was like, well, I studied wildlife bio and dance, and I love animals and I love dance, and I feel like it's important to like use art to get a message out. I like have always loved doing that. And all six of those dancers, they were each a different animal that I felt was either going to capture the audience's attention or was extremely popular in the climate change. Like one of them was a green sea turtle. Like we all see the picture of the straws in the turtles' noses. Like that's going to immediately capture the attention. But then I had animals in there that was like the California condor, which is something that not a lot of people think like, oh, like that is maybe an endangered species. But then I had the grizzly bear in there, which isn't the most endangered species, but I knew it would get, you know, our community's attention because it's, you know, where the grizzlies out here, everybody loves a grizzly bear. So and then throughout that show, it was the first half of the show was kind of describing each of the animals' journeys.
Grizzly bears can usually be found under or near big trees and dens. Scouting for berries or standing upstream to catch salmon, these bears find the joys of life in the sunlight of the day once hibernation is over.
Like it was like kind of like a day in their life, but they were all like friends in the wild because it's like not real. So I was like, they're all hanging out in the same forest under the same tree. Yes, no, there wouldn't be a penguin and a grizzly bear together, but it's dance, so it's fine. So they're all friends. And I feel like they were hanging out and they were trying to like fight this fight against humanity to like save themselves and save their population. So the first half, they're in their costumes and they're dancing. And then a tornado siren goes off. And they run off stage. And then that's intermission. So then the second half, they come back like they had just been fighting all day in the same costumes, but like all torn up. They had dirt on their faces. Like they look like they're starving. They've been fighting. They're hungry. They're lost, whatever. And then the whole second half is kind of, I wanted to shock the audience a little bit. I wanted to kind of like point a finger being like, this is your fault, but not in a way that was going to offend them and make people leave because I want them to stay. But I kind of wanted to get the reaction of like, oh, why are they looking at me like that? Like I did something, like they're acting on stage, you know? So I had the dancers like line up at the front of the stage and like stare at people and like make it a point in the dancing and in the song that like, this is all your fault. And then so by the end of the show, a voiceover comes over and they're all just standing in their own spotlights. And it said the following species have gone extinct. And like listed all of them out. So it was kind of like this whole like, this is where we're gonna be at in like maybe 2 years.
The following species have recently gone extinct. The China tiger, the grizzly bear, the California condor, the Hainan gibbon, the emperor penguin, and the green sea turtle. Although all of this could have been avoided, the generations to come will undoubtedly be haunted by one question above all others. Where did they all go?
Hannah used the IUCN Red List to check different species' endangered status and said she went full teacher mode when presenting the material to her dancers. Voiceovers, like the one you heard throughout this episode, provided context for audience members as the dancers playing the animals frolicked but also perished on stage. But, as a dramatic production, some of the details like extinction statuses were stretched for audience impact.
Then taking the choreography aspect of it, I made them like look up videos of how their animal moves. and like actually do it in front of me and then be like, okay, so now a sea turtle can swim, but like, what if a sea turtle had legs, was a human and had to dance? Like, how do you do that now? So pulling that into that, and then also like got to a point of even looking up like, how do they sleep? So like, if they fell over and passed away, how would it look? Like, we have to like find the sad videos too of like, if a grizzly bear just topples over, like, what is it going to look like?
It strikes me that you're someone who stares into the fire. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not afraid to look at realities, mm-hmm. which makes me want to ask, how do you protect your mental health if you're someone who doesn't just go into denial or disavowal?
I think personally, I'm protecting my mental health because I know that like the two careers I've chosen in my life are ones that I know can like make a difference for each other. In a sense, like I can use art to help spread messages about wildlife, and I can use my wildlife research to make art. Having those two things and actually actively working in both of those fields at the same time, I feel like I'm like, okay, I'm doing something. And just knowing that like I have this company that I'm able to voice my opinions whenever I want to, I'm like, you know what? If they don't want to hear it, then they don't have to hear it. But like, they're going to see it. They don't have to respond, but people are going to see it at some point.
Do you think it resonated with the audience and with the dancers?
I do. I had a lot of people come up to me afterwards in tears, asking if the facts that were stated throughout the show, like, are those true? Like, are you serious? And of course, like, their facial expressions and like the pain they showed on stage was enhanced for like audience emotional response. But there was a lot of emotion in the audience. I had a lot of like the dancers' dads that they say never cry. They were like, oh yeah, my dad was sobbing after that show. I was like, wow, that's good. All you have to do is put in something that everybody can relate to of like, oh, animals are so cute, but they're not doing well.
How are you processing, and do you feel like, why do I have to do this through dance? Why can't I just live a normal life?
Yeah, totally. I feel like I honestly don't process emotions fully until I dance them. Dance is something that is really special. And I also think in the sense of like relating to animals, they also can't speak. And like in dance, we're not speaking. So I feel like it's more being able to relate to them in the sense of like we use our bodies to communicate as dancers, and so do they, because we don't understand their language. And a lot of them don't understand each other's language too. But I feel like using dance is also just fun for me. Like, why not? It's something that people like to see. It's something where you can get like the most diverse group of thinkers together in one space to enjoy something. I feel like it's one of the easier ways, like through art, like even theater, through art, performance on a stage where people have to sit and be quiet and listen. They can't ask questions. It's a story. You're not giving a speech. So I feel like this project is just something that is going to continue because it's going to keep changing. Hopefully it gets better.
Well, hello. My name is Jonathan Marquis. I'm a multidisciplinary artist that has been drawing glaciers in Montana for the past 11, 12 years now. You know, I grew up on the East Coast and in the Midwest in southern Indiana. I also have sort of a memory as a young kid with my grandfather taking me out behind his property in Pennsylvania, and we just started sort of walking up this hill, not on a trail or anything, and I remember being pretty kind of scared, you know, like, well, how are we not going to get lost? Sort of my rational brain thinking there, but it was all fine. And I think those kind of memories really stick out about my initial experiences in and on the land.
Jonathan got his undergraduate degree at the University of Montana in painting and drawing and started backpacking while he was in Montana. He visited places over and over again and slowly started noticing change. It's hard to picture him as a child, worried about getting lost in the wilderness, knowing the adventures he's been on now. Jonathan's project, called the Glacier Drawing Project, is the only hand-drawn visual record of the 59 named glaciers in Montana's Crown of the Continent and Greater Yellowstone ecosystems. It's been recognized locally with an installation at the Missoula Art Museum and nationally with a write-up on Orion Magazine's website. Jonathan said the land is a place he goes to work through his mental health, and when he started bringing drawing into the process, it allowed him to have more of a conversation with the land, as he put it. Drawing became the way he engaged with climate change.
The ideology around this was initially to use drawing to produce a sort of an aesthetic and emotional record of my experience with these places and as a way to learn about them. I wasn't trying to prove climate change. I already had felt that was well established by the scientific community, and I've never been one who's wanted my artwork to just communicate a scientific story. I really like art to do what I think art does well, and that is, well, it does a lot of things, but it maintains dialogue from a different angle. It creates an aesthetic record. It approaches things through a more poetic and artistic lens, and I think also sort of tells us a little bit about how to live with these places and be in dialogue with them, whereas climate data tells us what's going on, but doesn't always tell us how do we live? How do we make sense of that? How do we think through this? How do we be engaged somatically with the landscape?
The way he talked about that process really reminded me of what Hannah said about the research she and her dancers did around animal movement for her dance production. Imagining loss or extinction may not be comfortable for either Jonathan or Hannah, but it seems like they both have the tools to do so. The creative outlets of dance and drawing seem to let them tap into something the rest of us really try to compartmentalize. Being a regular on the landscape, so to speak, was something Jonathan picked up from a conversation between two legendary Montana writers, William Kittredge and Doug Peacock. At a Q&A between the writers, Jonathan asked what he could do as a young artist to address climate change. Doug said, in essence, be a visitor in your own backyard. Here's Doug in 2019 offering some other good advice to The Atlantic.
If it's grim, find something, just a piece of beauty. You can find that every day.
It's the best cure I know for the metaphysical icky poos.
What do you think the value of an artifact or record is, and particularly as it relates to a planet in crisis?
I don't know. Maybe not much. What's a piece of paper when a 10,000 plus year old glacier disappears? And right now, all the artifacts in the world don't seem to be stopping the machine of climate change and sort of our endless resource extraction from these places. One thing that I think it does do, though, is it does enable discourse and dialogue. I mean, here we are, we're talking, some other people will hopefully listen to this discourse and dialogue that we're having, and maybe that will get them to think a little closer about the land and their place on it. Maybe I'm just preaching to the choir. I'm not really sure. But I've always been a little bit skeptical about what I do and what its value is.
Can you just describe for listeners like one of your gnarliest journeys to get in conversation with a glacier? Like, what does it take to do what you've done?
Some of the longest trips probably some deep ones into Glacier Park, where you just have to like bushwhack through Devil's Club and alder and thick foliage for a while. And then you got to climb up some really loose, gnarly 3,000 foot scree field to then gain a ridge and then climb a summit. And I mean, I've actually started to look forward to those days now a little bit. The more I've done it, I sort of used to hate those days. But fortunately, I have some friends that work and live around the park, and that's kind of their jam too. They're trying to like climb every peak in the park. So they go into some random places, and I've kind of like started looking forward to those long schlacks through crazy terrain. You just end up places and seeing things that otherwise you probably never would have come across. And you know, I guess living on that sort of edge is really invigorating. And then being able to get there, sit down, maybe make a drawing if it all works out. Yeah, it just feels a really great sense of accomplishment.
Beyond creating a physical record on the land, Jonathan's also tried to hold space for the emotional side. There's this phenomenon called the glacier ruin narrative. It's that you better hurry up to see those glaciers or those grizzly bears or those coral reefs because they're disappearing. It's defeatist before even considering the possibility of a solution. And it doesn't make any space for forming a relationship with one's environment. By using color and attention through drawing, Jonathan's able to counter that narrative a bit. By spending time in a place long enough to draw it, he's not dismissing what's happening on the ground. He can see the splendor of the glacier and also sit with the fact that it's so much smaller than if he would have been drawing it 50 years ago. When we assume something's already gone, there's no reason to strive for change. What can we even do for the grizzly bear or the glaciers? Why does it even matter if I use a plastic straw?
I kind of realized, though, that's an exact instance of what this glacial ruin narrative is kind of talking about, is that we assume they're gone already and there's nothing to do. And then why change our habits or way we live with the planet? You know, and for me, it's always been about, I guess my underlying vision is like, well, we should live in harmony with the planet. We depend on it. Like, just like we would try to live in harmony with our families or our friends. Like, to me, the landscape is an extension of those places.
Jonathan thinks of the glaciers as his friends now, just like I think of my home state of Alaska's Mendenhall Glacier as a relative. And it seems like a lot of other people think of the glaciers that way too, given the hundreds of thousands of people who travel to the Mendenhall, making it the most visited site in Alaska. That draw to something in jeopardy is called last chance tourism. And like anything, it has pros and cons. On the one hand, it gets people out on the land and experiencing something truly awesome. And on the other, what's the value of just doing something for the gram?
That's a really great question, because I don't know if there is an answer to it. Yeah, I totally feel like I'm in one way complicit in sort of climate tourism, or as I think you called it, last chance. I think I've tried to sort of distinguish myself from that by like, well, I'm going to go to these places over and over again. Like, it's, I guess maybe it's not my last chance. Like, I'm going to build a relationship there. I'm going to stay in my local area and realize that climate change is happening here too. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to stop anybody from having their nature experience, even if it's just to get a selfie and for Instagram, I guess. But I also want to encourage people like, hey, like, get to know your local land just as well. Building that relationship. I certainly think I am extracting not only information from the land, but also sort of cultural information. These are places that were tended and lived on by various Native American communities for years and years and years. And sort of what we have now is a product of their tending of these places.
Clearly, Jonathan's grappled with dissonance.
You know, I'm in a new place here. I just got a position teaching at a college in Oceanside, California. And so I'm thinking a lot about that relationship between the ocean and the challenges we're facing with ocean and climate, and that relationship to the glaciers in the mountains where a lot of water originates from. And so for me, these big ecological networks have always been something I've thought a lot about, to figure out how I participate and where do I fit in this big web of life, and what can, you know, one person do as an artist to sort of engage and be creative within that. And so I think that's what I try to push forward, is just being curious about the land and letting art and drawing be a way to sort of record that experience.
So what can you do to be in a curious and creative conversation with the land? Exploring that creativity is one of the ways we can learn to live well in a changing world. Thanks to KCD for audio from Where Did They All Go? When we come back, we're jumping from the arts to the sciences to understand the downstream effects of the pharmaceutical industry. Grounding is hosted by me, Sarah Aronson. Keely Larson is our executive producer. Editorial support from Lauren Korn and Claire Menahan. Engineering by Chris Moyles. Thanks to Michael Marsalek and Nick Mott. The theme song is by Brian Ramirez. Grounding is a production of Montana Public Radio.